Thank you. I want to talk about our real identity this morning. You know, identity is an interesting thing. Each of us has a sense of who we are, an awareness that we are alive and that we have being. But beyond that, exactly what else is there? We know that we exist, because when we look in the mirror, well, there we are. We are housed in a physical body, one that requires attention and maintenance. In the process of existing, we obey the dictates of time, with personal judgment and experience. We function according to established rules and regulations, that ask us to act or behave in a particular way. And we have discovered if we don't do so, well, there are consequences. We realize we are a person, an individual, a mortal being, one that displays traits of personality and character. And then we put it all together and we call it self. The one who we think we are. And yes, this is how we know us. Now, the only problem with this kind of reasoning is that over time, we do change our minds. You see, as we experience life, we find this in ways of adapting that modify ourselves and our personality. We do this in order to fit in where it is that we happen to find us at any moment in time. And at some point, we find us thinking about this self that we have established as us. And in the process of looking at us, that one that we thought we were, we realize that we no longer recognize this being as who we are. We discover that our view of life has been altered in ways that no longer accommodate those previous ideas that we had about that self, which we so carefully had put in place. Because you see, our belief system, it's not the same. And before long, we find us looking back at that drawing board, considering the latest ideas and concepts that we entertain about us. Oh yes, we understand that we still exist. But the question is, exists as what? You know, without a sense of personal identity, without an awareness of self, we really have no basis from which we can reason and ponder or reflect about life and about us. Our idea of us must be strong enough to endure any trial or tribulation that we may face. Basically, we require a foundation. One sustains an identity capable of meeting life's challenges. When someone wants to build a house, the first thing that is put in place is the foundation. Now, without a foundation, there is nothing to support the house. And you forget all about those plans that you had for the number of bedrooms and bathrooms. No need to select furniture for the living room or decide if the laundry room will be in the basement. You see, none of these little details will matter because without a foundation to support it, there will be no house. We have got to establish a foundation before we can begin to build anything. Now, if that foundation is shallow, built on swampy or rocky ground, the house will not stand, because the foundation was not firm enough to support it. We read of sinkholes, and we read of mudslides. Sometimes the developer neglects to consider what is under the ground that he wishes to build on. There may be water rights or abandoned coal mines, contributing to the probability of lawsuits and mismanagement. There is a lot to consider before a foundation can be put in place. And so it is with us. We begin by asking our questions. What kind of a foundation would be necessary to sustain and encourage us, regardless of what we are going through? What is the protection that would allow us to meet life's challenges? The ones without fear and without concern. What are the qualities and the characteristics of a self that may remain true to its name while going through all of those ups and the downs of experience? What is the identity of such a person? And what authority would support this individual? Well, what do others have to say? Poets and mystics refer to a self that is not stirred by troubled waters. They say there is a being that can look out on this world, not be touched or moved by its appearance. Apparently, there is a self that lives in this world and yet is not of it. Well, we long to know this person. We want to even have a personal relationship with them. Actually, this is who we would like to be. This is how we want to know us. Again, we wonder about that foundation that would support this individual. Intuitively, we feel we must first learn about the foundation before we can discover the one who would build on it and make it its home. To our sense of reasoning, they appear to be one. I mean, where does one end and the other begin? Well, back to the poets and the mystics, back to the passages in the Bible and the writings of those modern-day metaphysicians. They refer to a movement that put it all in place. They call it God's creative activity. God spoke the word and it was done according to his command. But exactly what was put in place? Well, let's think about it. What do we know about God? God is spirit. So what was established was a spiritual kingdom out of which everything was made, including us. We are told that spirit is the substance of all life, its essence, and its core of being. So the substance of anything is its reality. We make it personal. Our substance is spirit. That is our reality. That is our name. This is the foundation upon which we build. This is the identity that supports us throughout all adversity. I personally reason in this way. If my reality is spirit, then nothing of material form can touch me or move me. If what I see or I observe is not my reality, then it does not really belong to me, and I may let it pass right on by. Consciousness is where we live, and when we build our house on holy ground in heaven, then nothing can come nigh our dwelling place to do us harm. So how do we build our house in consciousness? We realize this house is not like that one that's built on the tract of ground in the housing development. We will not have to consider the number of bathrooms or bedrooms or whether there will be a den. But we also realize that we do not live in an empty house. We do not exist in a vacuum. Consciousness is awareness, and it is aware of something. But exactly what would a spiritual house contain? Well, since it is spirit, it would not contain material things. So we can forget all about furniture and kitchen cabinets and bathroom fixtures. Wouldn't be necessary to put a car in the garage because there would be no car and then there'd be no garage. You see, when we enter a realm of existence beyond form, we can no longer continue to think in that same old way. And I have to admit, wouldn't it be a real blessing to not have to dwell on things which break down or need mending? Not have to think about those things that wear out and decay. What belongs to the kingdom does not need fixing. In the kingdom, nothing grows old and nothing runs out. Knowing our true self, our real identity, we now establish a consciousness of spiritual treasures. These riches can never be taken from us. And moth and rust, they will not find them. We declare in this way, my true spirit is who I am, and my nature is divine. My name is written in heaven, because I know I am God's beloved child. This is my foundation. I may build on it, and I may rely on it to sustain it. I fill my awareness with the fruit of the Spirit, those intangible, unseen qualities of inner being. We all know them. We call them peace and harmony, joy and love. Actually, all power in life itself. If I can only stay in that consciousness, if I remain in my spiritual house, I too can walk in this world and not be touched or moved by its condition. Now, the more that I do this, not only is it my house, but I have now made it my home. Now, the word home is actually a feeling, a sense of comfort and security. When you leave your day job at the end of the day, you don't usually say, I'm going to the house or to the apartment. No, you say, I'm going home. The man of human good calls his home his castle. Spiritual man calls his home his sanctuary. For either man, home is his refuge, and the desire is to be there. For me, considering spiritual consciousness to be my true home assures me that that is where I belong. I mean, it sounds simple enough. It really does. But I've also discovered it's not all that easy to stay there. You see, the world does continue to get our attention. But we must also understand that it is not necessary to always act on what gets our attention. Now, I admit that there are times when all that the human eye might see is war and conflict. Whether we are talking about nations, neighborhoods, or families, it seems like there are times when we simply cannot get along. But you see, we all no longer belong to part of that warring factor, because that's not who we are. And then we begin to wonder, can one person actually make a difference? Can one individual look out on the world, not be touched by its appearance, and actually expect others to follow? We have discovered a new name, a new identity, and we have established a habit of meditation. Now, when we meditate, we take ourselves out of the conflict And we are alone with God. And in that precious moment, the world melts away. We can never feel God's presence until we are in the silence. After we have entered a state of stillness and quietness, we may carry it with us out into the world for a period of time, perhaps for a few hours, or maybe a little longer. Let us never leave our home without the assurance that I go before you, making every crooked place straight. Now, in time, the assurance that was received in the silence, it begins to fade a wee bit, and we find us announcing, I must go home now. And once again, we pause and we enter the inner sanctuary to be renewed in our determination that God is, and beside Him, there is none else. And again, we begin to wonder, can our newfound identity encourage others to lay down their lives and follow the spiritual path? That is, to cease from thinking in that same old way and establish a new idea of them. I believe that others may notice what we are doing, and they may be drawn to us for reasons that they really do not yet understand. You see, others will benefit when in the presence of one who is attaining a degree of Christ consciousness. Jesus proved that this was so. It was his consciousness of his true identity that allowed him to preach the gospel of truth, to heal the sick, and to comfort all of those who mourn. Many sought him out. But it was the one of the receptive attitude and the open heart that received the benefit. Now, were Jesus' actions successful in getting others to join him on the spiritual path? We read that he told them what he could do, they could do also. And the instruction was always given, go and sin no more. That is, no longer think of you as that lesser self. That is not who you are. Your true identity is written in heaven. Give no thought about your life, what you shall eat or what you shall drink or what you shall put on. For your Father knows that you have need of these things. Jesus was definite in declaring that there is a dwelling presence in all mankind, and his name is Christ. Christ is the only begotten child of God. And to enjoy a personal relationship with the Father, we must seek his kingdom as his child. And frankly, most people were willing to allow Jesus' consciousness do the work. They may not have believed him when he told them that they too could do what he did. Or maybe all they really wanted was to be free of whatever troubled them, continuing in the same old way, without any adjustment on their part. When Jesus healed the leper, we don't know if he remained free of disease. If he did not change his view of self, he may well have traveled that road again. What about the blind man and the woman taken into adultery? We simply do not know what happened to them after their encounter with Jesus. Now, I do feel certain that when Jesus told that man next to him on the cross that he would see him that day in paradise, that is indeed what happened. Now, I also firmly believe it's none of our business what one does after they have encountered us. They may have benefited from being in our presence, or maybe from something that we said, and they sensed something about us. When we practice His presence and live the truth that we know, others will notice. But it should not be our concern why they noticed us, why they came to us, or what they even did with the information that they received. Jesus did not check up on the leper in a few weeks just to see how he was doing. The Bible does not mention a single time when Jesus followed up on what others might have done with the truth that he gave them. Jesus lived from his true identity, and that was his only responsibility. And I believe that Jesus' only responsibility was to God, to fulfill his purpose and his reason for being. Let us understand that we too were sent as a light unto the world, and we serve our fellow man by knowing them by their true name. But we serve God first. And our only responsibility is to let our light shine. We do not have the authority to direct it, nor are we really wise enough to determine who is worthy to receive it. We have read that only the pure in heart shall see God. While our human nature is not capable of knowing who is pure in heart. Any determination on our part could simply be a personal judgment based on appearance, and such judgment does not have a foundation that would sustain us. And again, we find us talking about a foundation. To live according to our true identity, we do our building on a firm foundation, on holy ground. Our human nature is expressed in that statement of Paul's when he said, "But forgetting those things which are behind, looking up into the future, going forward now in this moment of awareness, we begin to climb anew." Let us choose this day to forget all that went before us, all of those many flaws and the uncertainties, all that belongs to the identity of the lesser self. Going forward in this moment, we climb to greater heights of awareness. We let go of the past and we reach for the high calling of true identity. No matter what we do or how we act as a human being, we cannot change who we truly are, the only begotten child of God. We can, however, neglect to live from this name. The purpose of today's lesson is to encourage you to lift your eyes on high and behold only Him. Do not depend or rely on your personal opinion or even your judgment. Because you see, all wisdom, knowledge, and understanding are within you, awaiting your acknowledgement and your acceptance. This morning we have the opportunity to claim our true name and serve God in all of our ways. Would you join me now in our closing meditation? In this time of stillness, we still our thoughts and we calm our emotions. This is a sacred time when we enter the holy sanctuary of inner being. We find us alone with God. No other presence, no distractions, and no demands. In the stillness, we listen with the inner ear, and we hear marvelous things. This is my child. You are not the one of the dust and human form. I created you. I gave you life, that one that is made in my image and of my likeness. I gave you the name of my beloved child, Christ, and I call you by that name. Contained in that name is every good thing. Joy, love, harmony, and peace, they belong to the sacred name, I Am. Let us not use it in vain. Throughout the coming week, let us go often to the quiet place. In the serenity of the moment, the world melts away, and we are at peace. We are filled with the light of infinite wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. Our humble acceptance is, speak, Lord, I listen, and I obey. Amen. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he cause his light to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. Turn within, acknowledge him, so that he may lift your consciousness and give you his peace. Amen.